This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I am not anti-Facebook memories. I'm actually for them. But darn if they don't make you feel old and like life's passing you by. Dukes just tweeted me and said, 6 years ago today, Joe Gibbs joined us on Washington Football Tonight to discuss what he thought about the struggling Redskins. We could do that segment tonight, and it would still be very relevant. Grant and Danny, no Danny today, thanks to Pete for kicking it with me for a little while. Let's go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline on this Football Friday, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game and every bet for real sports fans. Mike Jones, you can read in the USA Today and on their site, does a great job covering the NFL. For a long time, covered the Redskins, so let's start in D.C. Mike, Jay Gruden's job secure.
First, GP, speaking of Facebook memories, I had one yesterday. It was you, me, and some event that Joe Gibbs was at with JB and Michael Wilbon on roast. And I tell you, you were around, poly, you were a little roly-poly thing, not the spelt. Accomplished dad and radio host that you are now. So it made me proud of you.
I appreciate you, buddy. Time flies. Soon enough, I'll be back to my roly-poly ways. Just give me some time and a couple of bad decisions.
But, dude, I'm feeling lonely.
Mike Jones, you wrote for the Washington Post for years, and when you covered the Redskins, you covered coaching changes, right? Now,
right.
Jay Gruden has been here for 6 years. He's gotten through a lot of the times that others couldn't. Should he start to worry a little bit? Is his seat warming? This team's 0-2 if they get to 0-3 against the Bears.
I think that before Jay would go, we'll see Greg Minuski go. I mean, they tried to replace him in the offseason. They've got three guys on his staff that are qualified to be defensive coordinators. And so I think that whether it's Tom Sula or if it was Ryan or if it was Horton, I think that one of those guys will wind up being the defensive coordinator before this year is out. And then we'll see what happens with Jay.
How far off is Haskins, even if Keenum keeps playing well, if the Redskins can't win games?
Well, I think if they're like 0-5, you know, I mean, if Keenum is playing well and they've got a pulse, then I think they stick with him. But say that this thing's at a point of no return, they're 0-5 or 1-6 or something like that, then I think you go to Haskins. Everybody agrees that he's got great ability, but everybody's been in agreement that he also needs some refinement and to continue working on some things. But there's no better way to learn, I guess, at some point than to get the actual experience. And so if you're not going to catch the Eagles or the Cowboys in the division and you're already, you know, almost halfway through your season and your season's lost, then you might as well get the kid some reps and see, you know, how he does and what you have to do to continue to help him improve and put more around him.
At by Mike Jones on Twitter, the Bills are quietly 2-0. They came back from down 16 to beat the Jets, and they pummeled the Giants by 2 touchdowns and got Eli benched. Is Josh Allen developing into a decent passer? How has he looked through 2 games?
Yeah, I mean, he's made some big throws. He also, you know, he doesn't, you know, you wouldn't look at him and think of him as a guy that can hurt you with his legs, but he does have really good mobility. I think that more than that, they have a good defense as well. They've been building this thing. Sean McDermott, this is year 3 for him. They've been building and putting pieces in place, and you know they've been inching forward. And I think this year we're seeing, Allen took some lumps last year as a rookie. He's in his second year. He's feeling more comfortable. The whole, you know, team as a whole, they've got the pieces that they like, and so I think that's why we're seeing them off to this start, and I think they'll continue to – obviously the Patriots got that division, but I think the Bills have a chance to get a wild card spot possibly.
Wow. The Packers think that they're a playoff team as well. They've got games with the Eagles and Cowboys coming up in the next 2 weeks after Denver on Sunday at 1 o'clock at Lambeau. They're 2-0. What do you make of every time Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers have a conversation that doesn't look like every quarterback coach conversation, everyone acts like they hate each other?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think everybody knows Aaron Rodgers is a little difficult, you know, and also he's been in this league for a long time. He's used to be doing things a certain way, and he's got a guy who's almost the same age as him and doesn't have as much experience in that capacity as possibly Rodgers would like. But the one thing I know about Matt LaFleur is that he's very organized. He's a very good communicator, and he also knows how to deal with people. He knows how to talk to people. And so I think that, you know, some of that friction and everything like that, I think that Matt is doing a good job of managing it. It might look like things are a little tense, but I think they're still working on getting on the same page. I think that as they continue to win games, that's going to help earn Rodgers' confidence when he sees that this game plan is designed, it's helping him, it's working. And as Matt figures out, okay, I talked to him at the owners' meetings this year when he was still just preparing for OTAs, and he said the big challenge was to, he's got an offense and he's got philosophies that he believes in. But then how do you modify it and have some give and take for a guy who's as accomplished as Rodgers and, you know, not give him free rein and not run your offense, but find ways to run your offense within what Rodgers does well. So that's where they are. They're working on that. They're making progress every single week. And a win, a big win against a divisional rival like the Vikings last week is helpful. And like you said, they've got two really, you know, tough opponents coming up. It'll be a good proving ground for them. And I think if they come out of this with two wins, that's going to be huge for the Packers, for Matt LaFleur, and for Aaron Rodgers.
The voice of Mike Jones, USA Today Sports. Your last story was on Jalen Ramsey. Last night made 9 tackles and forced a fumble. He wants to be traded from Jacksonville. Is there any chance the Jags tell him, we think you're good, you're under contract, you're not going anywhere?
Yeah, it's possible. I do know that there are a couple high-ranking people in that organization who do want to keep him. I think Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone are probably at the point, from what I heard, they feel like, you know what, this is a distraction. This just, it might not even be worth it if we can get 2 first-round picks for him, although there are other people who are saying, no, we need to hold on to him. But the problem is he is tired of being there. They haven't been able to work out a long-term deal, you know, which he's been looking for. And, again, there's this friction that they've had on the sideline with him that we saw publicly. And I'm sure if we saw that publicly, there's been stuff behind closed doors as well. But it's definitely possible that they don't get the asking price that they're looking for, 2 first-round draft picks, and that they wind up saying, hey, look, suck it up, and we're going to keep on playing. And as we saw last night, the kid wants to win. And he goes out there and, you know, he played hard, and we'll see where it goes. But they definitely have people calling them. I was told the Chiefs, the Titans, the Seahawks. I know other people have reported the Eagles might be another team. There's been several other teams that have been floated out there of having interest. But it's a matter of being willing to give up 2 first-round picks and being willing to sign him to a long-term deal that will make him the highest-paid cornerback in the league, which is going to be about $50 million guaranteed. So we'll see where this thing goes.
Lamar Jackson's been accurate, and he has been almost perfect in wins over Miami and Arizona. They're going to jump up a level to play the Chiefs this weekend.
Right.
Is he for real?
I believe he's for real. He can't help with his defenses that he went against, but when you see the decision-making and the ball placement and the way he keeps his eyes downfield when he's looking instead of just like last year, tucking the ball and running the first time there was an open receiver, you can tell that he definitely has improved. I saw him in training camp, and you could tell they were definitely working on getting the ball out of his hands quickly, but he wasn't accurate at all. And I was like, good grief, man, this is going to be a rough year. Well, here we are 2 weeks into the season, and he's got one of the highest completion percentages, the highest quarterback rating, and, you know, there's no hesitation. His balls are very accurate. He's, you know, got defenses second-guessing left and right because they don't know if he's going to throw or he's going to run. He is definitely taking a big leap. Terrell Suggs, his former Ravens teammate, after the game on Sunday said he looks like a real quarterback now and he's phenomenal. So when you have that kind of praise from a longtime veteran in the NFL who saw those struggles in practice every single day and then has seen him take the leap, I think the guy's for real.
Mike Jones, my former Road Dog when we were on the beat together. And a guy, you know, we covered a team with a coaching staff that got blown out. LaFleur is 2-0 with Green Bay. Kyle yep. Shanahan is 2-0 with San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And you got another 2-0 coach, and Sean McVay was in the Super Bowl last year with the Rams. Not too shabby for that Mike Shanahan staff.
No, not at all. And you got Mike McDaniels on Kyle Shanahan's staff. He's going to be probably in a year or two, he's going to be a head coach because a lot of people are buzzing about him.
Which is crazy, by the way, based on what he was when I covered him.
Right. But when you have a conversation with him, the dude went to an Ivy League school. He's really, really smart. He's grown up. I was watching the practice. At times, Kyle just stepped back and he was running the show.
Wow.
He's called like he's like co-offensive coordinator. But he knows that stuff inside and out. And it's really amazing. Like we said, when Mike Shanahan announced all these guys, everybody thought it was Kyle Shanahan's drinking buddies. But no, there were a bunch of pretty smart and creative, hardworking young guys. And now we're seeing why Mike Shanahan had picked them to surround him. It's just too bad that everything just went kafooey, and we didn't get to see what that staff could have been like together for a long time.
Everything went kafooey. How do you spell kafooey?
I don't know. We'll see what my talk to text stands up once we hang up here.
I don't know that your talk to text is going to know that one. Mike, thank you, buddy.
All right, man. I'll see you.
That interview was going great, and then it went kafooey. Like a spelling bee, you have to write it on your hand, and then you ask someone, you go, place of origin, please. Kafui. Can you use it in a sentence, please? I don't know that I've ever heard.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
That word. Grant and Danny, no Danny today, right here on The Fan. It is a Football Friday. We are presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game and every bet for real sports fans. Let's look at the Sunday schedule next. Give you a first thought on each game as we run through the slate. Hub Arkish at 1:30, and I got a Nats Marlins preview for you at 1:45. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Danny will be back on Monday. We'll spend all of Monday getting you ready for the Redskins and the Bears in primetime at FedEx Field. Many of you will be going out to the game, although perhaps not a lot of you, based on what I'm seeing as far as available tickets and the prices to get into the stadium coming way down this week for the second home game of the 8 in Landover, Maryland this year. But I wanted to spin around the National Football League here, hop game to game, and kind of give the one big question that jumps out at me at each matchup going through the slate. I'll tell you that Hub Arkish will be on the show, does a great job covering the Bears and the NFL in Chicago, bottom of the hour at 1:30. So here's your one big question. Starts you off with the Bengals and the Bills. Josh Allen turning into a thing? I don't know that we're really going to get a true answer against Cincinnati, who should be 0-3, particularly with an offensive line. They're on a third interior starter and another backup at tackle. Joe Mixon's got a bum ankle, so they can't really be balanced. They can't run the ball like they want to for Andy Dalton. Buffalo should win at home. But Allen didn't throw the ball well enough last year, made a lot of mistakes. He was a rookie, and he had no weapons around him. And people bashed him, and you're allowed to. There's nothing wrong with that. But you got to give guys time that come out of college not being particularly accurate, who are going to be dependent on players around them as passers. He's a really good playmaker, can extend plays with his feet. He's uber athletic, can run a little bit. And the 23-year-old has a couple touchdowns, couple of picks, thrown for 507 yards and an 84 rating through two games. Went for 254 and a touch against the Jets, 253 and a touch against the Giants. Starting to show some strides. One big question, Cowboys, Dolphins. Is Dallas going to play down to opponents this season? You can make the case that they did that for part of their game against the Redskins. I don't have them beating Miami by the 20-plus that the spread is calling for, but Dallas traditionally has played a brand of football and a style that keeps teams in games. We're going to run it, ball controlled, slow, not get a lot of plays off. Not as many possessions, not as many points, perhaps. They're more exotic under Kellen Moore offensively. They can throw the ball now. They can spread you out and light you up. Are they going to try to do that against the Dolphins? 1 o'clock kick in Dallas. Broncos-Packers, 0-2, 2-0, Lambeau Sunday at 1. Is Denver headed for another top five pick? You win this game. Theoretically, at that point, you should be 2-1. They got jobbed more than anybody by the officials last week. Probably not a bottom feeder, a cellar dweller. You're not a disaster. You're 0-3, though, as we're talking about with the Redskins and some of these other 0-2 duds like Carolina playing on the road at Arizona this week. Cincinnati, we just talked about. You're on your way to being potentially 6-10, 5-11, and in the mix to pick in the top five. I'm wondering about the Broncos. They should have taken it on the chin and just went young. They didn't. For some reason, they acquired Joe Flacco. That's not going to help you. And they keep pretending like they're closer than they are. Falcons-Colts, 1 o'clock in Indianapolis. Is Atlanta the team that's going to benefit most from not having Drew Brees in the South? Carolina doesn't seem, right now without Cam Newton, good enough to take advantage of that break. Tampa Bay, 1-1, plays the Giants. They may be a big-time beneficiary in the next several weeks after stealing a game from the Panthers on Thursday Night Football. But Atlanta, a lot of people thought was a wild card team. That's a 9 or 10 win team, they said, the experts claimed. That's a team that gets into the playoffs. Drew Brees, without being able to throw a pass now for the next handful of weeks, the Saints, sans one of the great quarterbacks of all time, that division is now up for grabs. Handle your business, go to Indy, get a win. Ravens Chiefs, game of the weekend, Sunday at 1 at Arrowhead, 2-2-0 teams. Lamar Jackson, are you for real? We might find out. Pat Mahomes, by the way, he's regressed substantially this year. He's only got 7 touchdowns and 821 yards through 2 games. Last year, he had 10 touchdowns already at this point. The dude is ridiculous. He had to play one quarter, legitimately, against the Raiders. That was it. He threw 4 touchdowns in a quarter, and they won by 18 points. If there's a more fun player to watch in the NFL, tell me who it is. Danny would tell you Deshaun Watson. Give me Mahomes every single time. It's weird to say him twice on Sunday because, well, you know why. They play on Sunday. Raiders-Vikings in Minneapolis. Kirk Cousins coming off of a dreadful game. He has to respond. Question, is Kirk going to bounce back? Cousins took over as starter in Washington in 2015. Redskins made the playoffs that year. The next year, they had a Week 17 game to play into the postseason, and then he had one final year as their starter in 2017. In 4 years now, as a starting quarterback in this league, he has not played as bad as he did this past weekend. He single-handedly cost the Vikings their game. I hate to say it, but he did. They ran the ball, they played defense, and he laid an egg. He's better than that. Now, all of the loudmouths all over the country that think he's terrible and have been proven wrong for 3 years, they come out of the woodwork to say, see, I told you so. Okay, I guess we'll just pretend like the last 3 years didn't happen now. But this is a team built to win. Their defense is playing as well as it was when Case Keenum got them to the conference final, and they got great production out of their backfield last week. No excuse for Cousins not to play better in those games. He plays just average. He plays okay. They beat the Packers last week. They need him to respond against the Raiders. They're heavy favorites. I believe 9 points at home. They got to win. One more here. The Lions and the Eagles. 1 o'clock in Philly. Lincoln Financial Field. Detroit's 1-0-1. The Eagles are 1-1. Seen the Eagles injury report? Corey Clement didn't practice today. Jonathan Cyprian didn't practice yesterday. Dallas Goedert, no practice. DeSean Jackson, no practice. Alshon Jeffrey, not available. Timmy Jernigan, not practicing. They had 8 guys miss practice yesterday. I don't know what the number is going to be today. They may be without as many as 4 or 5 starters on offense. The Lions are getting a gift. There's no better week to play. The Philadelphia Eagles, who should be one of the powerhouses in the conference, than this one. Steal this win, and when you look back a few months from now, it's going to look like you stunned Philadelphia on the road, and you earned it. You'll have to earn it anyway. Carson Wentz and that defense will mostly be at full strength. But if they're having played 3 games, not having suffered a loss yet, Detroit's going to be feeling pretty good about themselves. They'll be kicking themselves for letting the Cardinals come back and tie them. But 2-0-1, pretty decent spot to be for a team that a lot of people thought was going to be headed for double-digit L's. Some of the big questions in the matchups on Sunday, we can get to more a little bit later on. I've also got a preview of the Nats and the Marlins tonight for you on Grant and Danny next. Hub Arkish joins us from Chicago. Nobody more insightful on the Bears. What are the Redskins going to have to deal with come Monday night? We'll scheme up Chicago with Hub in a moment. Football Friday on Grant and Danny, as always, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game and every bet for real sports fans. Please to go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline right now. Welcome onto the show, Hub Arkish from Chicago. Covers the Bears, the NFL, the executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, and one of the OGs. If I had a dollar for every story of yours I read growing up and how much I learned about football from you, I'd have a lot of money. It's awesome to have you on the show. How you been, Hub?
I'm good, Grant. You're too kind. Thank you much for having me today.
Absolutely. Westwood One reporter and on the sideline of the national broadcast as well. Let's just start with the Bears and get a little preview from you on Monday night. I watch Mitch Trubisky, and he just doesn't pass the eyeball test for me. Where are we at in Chicago on the opinion of what he is and whether or not there's a ceiling there that can still get the Bears to where they want to go?
Well, I mean, the consensus amongst media and fans is that the death watch is on, so to speak. They are certainly disappointed with what he has shown the first 2 weeks in his now third season as the starter of the football team. I think the flip side of that, though, is that sometimes, especially early in the year, you really got to look at the circumstances about the opposition, about why game plans are set up the way they are, and how much of a chance he is getting to be the quarterback that they want him to be. Internally, at Ellis Hall, I don't think there's any question that they still believe that he can be the guy. They certainly acknowledge that he has not done enough yet to prove that he will be or that he owns that spot. But he's a guy with really some special talents for the position, and that's what they continue to work on. And actually, Monday night is a big deal for him because it's a game that is perceived to be a little more in his wheelhouse than what they've had the first 2 weeks. And I think that a big performance will certainly help, but a bad performance in Washington could really create a lot of controversy around Chicago about him as the quarterback.
Trubisky's completed 58% of his passes, no touchdowns, a pick, and a 65 rating. Why is this game, the perception is it's in his wheelhouse? Why?
Well, I mean, you know, to be honest with you, part of it is because of the opponent and the way that Washington has played defense. You look at the first 2 weeks, they came in here in the opener, and that game, I think you almost throw out, people outside of Chicago probably didn't get this feeling or understand it, but it was like bigger than life. The whole 100th celebration business, the Packer rivalry, the Bears coming off that season, the last game they played was the double doink. You just got to start to ignore a lot of that stuff. But then you go out to Denver, and when you realize what they accomplished there, they're the second team in the last 19 years to win a game there the first couple of weeks in September. And so the game plan was built to find out how to possibly make that happen. It was shorten the game. It was win it physically. It was don't open up the playbook. Now you come to Washington, you see a defense that has really struggled, a defense that is probably going to be without its best player in Jonathan Allen, or at least one of its best players, I should say. And that's where the perception comes from. That you know, this is a chance for Trubisky to really for really Matt Nagy to open up the playbook for Trubisky and to show, you know, everything that he can do.
Hub underscore Arkish on Twitter, executive editor, Pro Football Weekly. As far as the running game goes, it looked like they turned things over to David Montgomery this past week. Is the Mike Davis experience over?
Well, you know, there's a lot of us in Chicago who wonder why the Mike Davis experience started in the first place. and he's a great kid. You know, Grant, as you know, in this business, sometimes we have to be critical of players because that's our job. And I would hate for anybody listening to think that we're critical of them as people, because that's not the case. I could never do what Mike Davis does. But this is a guy who was a career backup with two different teams over 4 years in the league. And they didn't bring him in to be the franchise, so to speak. But he certainly was their first priority free agent. And a lot of folks just didn't understand it. Now, there may be still some things there. You know, Matt Nagy thinks he's a great fit for what he wants in his running backs and his running game. But David Montgomery was drafted to be the guy. It was only week two, but the fact that he got 18 carries, tells you that they think he's ready now. And so I would certainly expect to see him be the focal point of that running game Monday night.
I know that defensively, to stop the passing game, you're sending help to Allen Robinson with his 11 catches. He seems to get all the targets. Tariq Cohen out of the backfield is the big weapon that they're going to use like a Swiss Army knife. Who else do I worry about if I'm Greg Minuski? Is there anyone else in this passing game that gets looks?
Well, that's a great question, Grant, because I'm in the minority here in Chicago, but I think a lot of what is being aimed at Mitch Trubisky may not be fair because he hasn't had a lot of receivers running wide open. Now, the word around Chicago, and I think a lot of people around the league felt that this could be the best group of pass catchers that they've seen with this team in a decade or two, but a lot of that was based on prospects and hopes. Anthony Miller is a kid they traded up for in the second round last year. He had 7 touchdowns on just 34 catches and played the last 13 weeks of the season with a chronic dislocated shoulder that kept popping in and out. So he was supposed to emerge as the number two. He only got 16 snaps in the game against the Packers. He got twice that last week against Denver, but he is, for whatever reason, not separating or making himself available. Taylor Gabriel is there to take the top off the defense, and yet he continues to appear to only be open underneath. And then you've got the kids who haven't had a chance yet, really, and Javon Wims and Riley Ridley. I think that, you know, Minuski, I'm sure, is sitting there saying, well, Miller's the guy we got to keep an eye on. He's the guy they're going to try and get to. But then you get Tariq Cohen, never knowing where he's going to be. Is he going to be in the slot as a receiver? They're going to throw to him out of the backfield, and you plug in Cordarrelle Patterson. So I would think that the whiteboard in the Redskins, you know, defensive room right now says Allen Robinson, Tariq Cohen, probably Anthony Miller, Taylor Gabriel, and then Cordarrelle Patterson in that order.
Hub Arkish on Grant and Danny, NFL Insider at our sister station in Chicago, 670 The Score. Is this defense as good as last year's group, or is it too early to tell?
It's better.
Really?
That I will say without hesitation. They basically have everybody back except Adrian Amos and Bryce Callahan. Bryce Callahan is a really good nickel, but he's already hurt again in Denver. He hasn't played the first 2 weeks, and that's why they didn't re-sign him. Adrian Amos was probably the 11th best player on the defense last year. Ha-ha Quinton Dix is an upgrade. I'm curious what Washington folks think about that, because obviously you got him, what, week 5 last year.
And he struggled immensely here.
Well, yeah, but still, they made an attempt to keep him there because of his ball hawking skills, and he's got some unique traits for the position. But the reason I'm convinced the Bears' defense is better is, number one, you've now got both Khalil Mack and Roquan Smith with a training camp under their belts. Neither one was playing in training camp last year. One of the reasons that they didn't do more with Khalil Mack was because he was new to the scheme. Now they're moving him from side to side. Roquan Smith is clearly an improved player over last year. And when you look at the defense overall, you look at Eddie Goldman and Roy Roberts and Harris up front, you look at Smith inside, Leonard Floyd outside at linebacker, and then Jackson in the secondary. These are all young players who've taken a step forward this year. So, you know, the 36 takeaways last year, there's puck luck involved in that. I mean, you know, they're great players, great defense, but you got to have the ball bounce right. There's no way they were going to do that again this year. And they've started slow, only one takeaway in the first 2 weeks. But when you look at the physicality and the speed that they play with, I mean, you know, they held the Packers and Aaron Rodgers to 10 points. You got to win that game. I mean, that's on the offense, not the defense. The defense has been exceptional the first 2 weeks and is continuing to improve.
Khalil Mack, it's funny to say he only has 1 sack in 2 games, but he's got the 1 and they've got 7 as a team. They have no problems getting to the quarterback. So what is the perception then? Give me an idea outside looking in. I feel like when teams play the Redskins, the notion is maybe this is the week we get right or we get fat on this team. Is that overstated? They've been competitive in 2 games against 2 powerhouses in the conference. What are people saying about this matchup?
Well, you know, people, you know, first, as far as the team, players and coaches never look at it that way. I mean, that's not just cliche. or just, you know, conversation when they talk about there are no easy wins in the NFL. The Bears know. You go into Washington on Monday night in front of a national TV audience, that team's going to be ready to play. And so they're preparing for just as tough an opponent as they had the first couple of weeks. They will do more things and adjust the game plan based on what they're seeing as film and the relative strengths. Seeing on film, I should say, and the relative strengths of Washington's offense and defense. But Grant, I think Jay Gruden is one of the most underrated coaches in football. I think that what he has accomplished in keeping them competitive in spite of one of the most dysfunctional ownership and front office situations we've ever seen is pretty remarkable. And I know players and coaches, they respect that. They understand that this is going to be a well-prepared, well-coached football team that seems to play beyond their record. I mean, I don't know how much of that first game was Washington's better than we're giving them credit for, or Philly just wasn't ready in the first half. But that game, you know, that could have gone either way. And Dallas, that was a bad spot last week. The Cowboys are just hot and rolling right now. And you've got Washington, you know, suffering both the holdout of Trent Williams, the injuries to guys like Allen and Jordan Reed, and it's going to make it tough. So I think the perception, or at least my belief, is that this is going to be a good football game probably for at least 30, 40 minutes. I do think the Bears are a much more talented team, and so that usually does win out. But I don't think anybody believes that the Bears are just going to show up and win by throwing their helmets on the field.
Read Habarkish's work in Pro Football Weekly, and you can hear him, of course, on Westwood One's broadcast of primetime games. Hub, thanks so much for the time and the insight. Much appreciated.
All right, Grant, thanks for having me. Take care.
My pleasure. It's a Football Friday. Good to get a little taste from Chicago of some Bears insight as we get ready for Monday Night Football. I'll give you Grant's best bish, the lock of the week for you, coming up next. Also, we got to pay some attention to the Nationals before we get out of here. They've got the Marlins this weekend, and they need to take this series, maybe even get a sweep, as they try to hold off the Brewers and the Cubs. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 the Fan. Quick look at the Wild card standings. The Nats race for a red October is on the Fan. Presented by PVI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, and affordable. Business grows with PVI. Visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland, or online at PVI.com today. Because the Cubs have lost two straight nights in extra innings, keep doing that, please, Chicago. The Nationals find themselves two games up on the Cubs, who are suddenly out of the playoffs looking in. As of today, first time, long time, the Brewers would be the team playing the Nationals in the wild card play-in game, and that game would be held to start October right here in D.C. at Nats Park, a few blocks from where I'm sitting on Half Street. The Nationals are one game up on the Brewers at this point. Now, Milwaukee, as many of you know, is on fire. I still say, and I think I am in the minority on this just because of how Milwaukee's playing. It seems like they've got momentum, and they're feeling themselves, and everyone's gotten hot in that lineup all of a sudden. But I would rather play Milwaukee than Chicago. I would rather play Milwaukee than, say, the Mets. I would rather play Milwaukee maybe even than the Phillies. And my reason for that is, and you could tell me this is flawed logic if you'd prefer to, I believe the Brewers' starting pitching, which is lacking, they don't have a guy that'll go out there in a play-in game and shut you down over six or seven innings. It just doesn't exist for them. I think that gives you a really good chance in a nine-inning, one-off play-in game. Now, clearly their lineup has caught some fire. That's how they're winning, you'd think. Except that when you look at the numbers over the last 7 days, Mike Moustakas is hitting 125, three for his last 24. Lorenzo Cain is hitting 217, five for his last 23. Eric Thames is hitting 182, four for his last 22. You look up and down that order, Yasmani Grandel, two for his last 20, hitting 100. It's more timely hits. They've hit some home runs. Kane's got a pair. Moustakas has a pair. Braun hit a grand slam to win a game. Grandel, Hura, Shaw all have home runs. They're winning close games, pretty low scoring, because their bullpen has been unbelievable. And that is my one concern about Milwaukee in a play-in game. If we're going to talk about play-in scenarios, if you don't have a lead over the Brewers after six innings, it's probably a loss. Whereas, if you're playing Chicago and you're down 4-2 to the Cubs going to the seventh, I can get even with that bullpen. If I'm playing the Mets and I'm down 4-2 going into the seventh. And Jacob DeGrom gets knocked out of the games at 93 pitches starting the inning, and then you work some counts, and he's at 102 laboring with a guy at third or something, and they go get the reliever. I might have a chance to scratch out a couple of runs. I'm not sure I'd do that against this Brewers bullpen, where right now it almost doesn't matter who they call out of the pen. Drew Pomeranz this week has pitched three times, hadn't allowed a run. Alex Claudio three times, hadn't allowed a run. Jay Jackson three times, hadn't allowed a run. And that's all before they get the ball to Josh Hader, who has struck out four in his last three innings and three appearances this week. And remember, struck out the side to strand the bases loaded in the ninth against the Nationals here at Nationals Park when the Brewers were last here. But who the Nats are going to play when they get to the play-in game they might not get to probably isn't the best way to focus or look at this thing right now. Let's get there first. Let's win enough games to get where you need to go. 11 games to play, and the Nats, as of right now, have 83 wins. Jokingly, Danny and I, all season long, have kind of had this race to 89 in our minds for two reasons. One, that's what the experts analytically said it would take to make the playoffs. So if you get to 89, you're probably getting in. But also, the 89 would be a half win more than the over-under total that we got on a bet at 88.5. So that's kind of been the number we've been tracking all year long. Six more wins and they get there. The Brewers, by the way, have the same number of wins as the Nats as we talk right now today, 83. They've played two more games, though. The Nats have two games in hand. So the idea is the Nats two ahead in the loss column, that you win one of those two extra games you're playing where they're having days off, and now you move ahead of them by a game. They've got two games in hand. That's kind of where the edge comes right now in the one-game lead. The Nats are a better team as far as the duration of this season. I think everyone would tell you that. Plus 113 in run differential. Milwaukee is minus 21. They've been outscored by 20-plus runs this year. The Nats have outscored opponents by more than 110 runs. That's pretty revealing when a season is almost completely over. But what matters is the Brewers aren't losing. They're stringing wins together, 8 of their last 10. They've gained three games on Washington in the last week and a half. So they're knocking on the door. Great chance for the Nats, though, this weekend as they play the Marlins. If you don't get two out of three and you lose this series, I'm not sure you deserve to make the playoffs, to be honest with you. You then have to go steal games and sweep a team like Cleveland when they're desperate. You got to go take four out of five or all five from the Phillies to make up for that. Just handle your business. Pitch with Anibal Sanchez coming off back-to-back seven-inning starts, Strasburg and then Austin Voth, well enough to give this lineup a chance. This lineup should beat up on this Marlins pitching staff. It has all season long. The Nats have dominated the Marlins. It's how they've gotten back into the playoff picture, by pummeling teams like Miami. And they need to start doing it again as soon as they throw that first pitch tonight. Davey Martinez will be on the bench. The big news of the day, Chris Russell, more details at the top of the hour. He is rejoining the team in Miami and is going to skipper the ball club tonight. Before we get out of here, my best bish for you. I am 1-1. With an asterisk, I got screwed last week. Drew Brees got hurt in my best bish. Give me the New York Giants, a underdog, +6.5 on the road, Dar, at Tampa Bay. The Fighting Daniel Joneses, +6.5, to cover that number against the Tampa Bay Bucs.
I'm not going to tell you betting against Jameis Winston is a bad idea.
He's going to eat some W's this weekend.
I bet he's not.
Can you imagine thinking that was a good idea for him to say that? Someone had a great tweet the other day. His record since he did that bit with the eating of the W's, and I don't remember what it is, but the Bucks are like something like 11-36 since he ate a W.
I thought it was like 2-18.
That makes more sense. They are so bad ever since he did the worst pregame routine anyone's ever done. That'll do it for now. If you missed any part of today's show, TheFanDC.com is where you can find our podcasts, GrantandDanny.com/audio. If you missed Kevin Bacon earlier this week, Jimmy Moreland, Silly Hub Arkish this hour, Mike Jones, go grab those podcasts. Enjoy your weekend. This has been a Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino, Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.